assistance program at the Department of Human Services. Dan was talking about allocation spending levels today, and I do want to start off by saying that there is never overspending because we can't spend any more money than is appropriated for this program, and that is part of the issues that counties are dealing with when we give them their allocations too.
Ms. Catulli, I knew the minute I said it, you would call me on that, so and you did. It is underspending. Yes. Thank you.
We have some really good fiscal staff, and we never overspend.
Yes.
Glad to hear that.
All right. The basic sliding fee allocation is a capped allocation. It's a designated amount of money that can be spent for child care assistance. The state allocates that out to counties on a calendar year basis. So every year before October, we're required to tell them what their calendar year allocation will be in the next year. We do that based on a formula that's in statute. I believe that each of you has in your packet the statute that has the formula. It's 119B03 subdivisions 6 and 8. And so that's what we use to do the allocations to the counties. More details about that allocation formula will follow. Also, I want to refer to a handout that I gave you previously and that you'll be getting again soon. In the forecast document, and that's the forecast pages for the child care assistance program. Even though it's not even though basic sliding fee isn't a forecasted program, the amount of money that's available to spend for basic sliding fee is always published in that document. Once we allocate the money out to counties, the counties have some responsibilities related to that money. They can't overspend either. If they do, they pay the bill. So counties have to determine how many families they can serve with the funds that we've told them are available in their allocation. They add families into basic sliding fee if the funds are available, and they place families on the waiting list if funds are not available. The eligibility parameters for basic sliding fee would allow more families to get service than we have money to pay for. So the waiting list is part of this. One of your handouts is also the waiting list for basic sliding fee. I believe it's for December, the most current waiting list. And you'll see that on the top of that handout, we have the priorities in the waiting list. And you'll see that we've tried to make, we and the legislature have tried to make some sense of highest risk families or the families that we've already invested quite a bit of money in and continuing those families. So the first priority is people without a high school diploma or a GED who have kids and who need education in order to get a job. They're considered to be the highest risk in our state. The second priority is people who complete transition years. Those are families who've already been through MFIP. They've gotten off of MFIP. They're in newly stable employment. We've already made a significant investment in these families, and we want them to be able to continue. So we try to get them onto basic sliding fee as soon as possible. The third priority is portability pool. These are families who have already been served in one county under basic sliding fee. They might have moved for their job to another county, and that county has a waiting list. The portability pool allows them to serve for up to 6 months while their name moves up on the waiting list in the new county. The fourth priority is veterans, and there's a specific status for veterans that puts them at a higher priority, and that's in the statute. The fifth priority is all the other families who are eligible for a basic sliding fee, who need to look for a job, who want to look for a job, who need child care to support their employment, or who need child care to support their education. And right now you'll see the waiting list for that is 7,099 families. Once the county decides to serve, okay, so the county has to choose whether or not they can afford to put a family on the program. Once the county decides to serve a family, the family must receive service until they lose eligibility or leave the program. Which the county cannot take families off if they run to the limit of their allocation. So if it looks like they're going to reach the limit and they have too many families on, they can't take families off, except when the federal or the state appropriations are diminished within a calendar year. So I mean, it's very clear that they have to plan for the amount of funds that they have and to not spend more than that unless they want to spend county funds.
We're having a debate up here about overspending or not overspending. So that would be, so the counties they do have the monies and then have to pay for the families that are on it. Can you explain, that's not considered overspending even if they're using?
If there are not sufficient funds in the allocation to serve all the families that they've added to the program, then the county must pay for those families with county funds.
And that's not considered overspending?
Pardon me?
And that's not considered overspending?
Not overspending the allocation because it's not costing the state or the federal government more money.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm Ann Sessions from the Department of Human Services. I saw sort of the eyebrows, perplexed eyebrows earlier. I think the issue is that if the county overspends during the year, that the county is responsible for it, but if overall in the state there's underspending, the state can use that underspending to give to the counties that overspend. So when...
That's coming up in the next slide.
Right. I mean, so while if a county overspends, the county is liable, it doesn't always end up, the county doesn't always end up having to pay. Okay?
So I think we said there is overspending, but not without, but without liability. We were, you know, sort of like Abbott and Costello here, and he's on first, you know, in terms of semantics, but I think, we'll have you proceed.
On a statewide basis, we have an amount of money that we can't spend more than. So the state can't spend more than the federal and state dollars that are available to spend for this program. But once it gets out to counties, it's a little bit different. So let's talk about the formula now, and then there's a few more points we can make about the underspending, overspending. The formula includes a number of components. One of them is the guaranteed floor, and that's 90% of the prior year allocation. The guaranteed floor is intended to create stability in funds because the counties are responsible for paying for services for families that they add, and they're responsible for doing this over a number of years if the family continues to be eligible. They need to have a pretty good sense of how much money will be available to them to do this. So the floor is intended to help create stability for the counties as they're making their decisions about adding families to the program. The other four parts of the allocation formula, if you look at your handout with subdivision 6, has the other four parts in it.
We have a question from Representative Ward. Representative Ward?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to go to the guaranteed floor allocation formula. If I'm in a county and I know that next year I'm going to part of my appropriation is going to be due to the guaranteed floor that I had the year before, how does that prevent overspending? How does that, in other words, you follow my question? You follow what I'm saying here? Is okay, I know that I'm going to be allocated appropriated so much money the following year based on my previous year. How does that not have overspending then?
Ms. Katonis?
Generally, the count. Okay, so I think you're trying to make the point that 90% is less than 100%. So how does that work? Is that the question,
Representative Ward?
Well, am I wrong in my assumption that the guaranteed floor, the formula for the next year, refers back to the previous year at 90% of the prior year allocation?
Well, actually, as it plays out, it's usually 2 years ahead. So the 09 allocation probably is, the floor is based on the 2007 expenditures because that's the last fiscal or the last calendar year that was completed before we had to send the allocation amounts out to the counties. So, I mean, it's slightly removed because we have to have the final data from the end of the calendar year. It does create complications. Generally, the counties have enough families on their program that if they know, you know, approximately pretty close how much money they're going to have, if it looks like they have too many families on during the year, they can plan to not add additional families as some families drop off. So attrition does take place every year in every county, and then they have to make choices about whether to add new families or not and whether they have more money or not.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Okay, let me rephrase my question.
Okay.
Does this way of allocating appropriating funds impact other counties? impact other counties' appropriations, or if I'm in a county and I want to make sure that I get my county enough money for the following year, for my county, does this impact? Have you seen that happen at all?
Generally, when the allocation level stays stable, this keeps the allocations pretty stable between counties. This doesn't move money much. It keeps it within the same counties that had it before. So it's not moving it around. If there was a significant decrease, they would get 90%, or they would get less than the 90%.
Representative Ward.
So does that encourage counties to spend more? Spend more.
Ms. Katoma.
Representative Slawick and Representative Ward. In counties that have underspent for a number of years, if they had a waiting list, they could be encouraged to add more families because they would know that they had more money than they had been spending previously. But that this component of the formula is designed to support stability and not support movement of money particularly.
So I just have a quick question too. If there's 7,099 families on the waiting list now, how does that compare historically?
It's all over the place over time. I have a little chart here from April of 2000, which I did not send to the committee, but it's a roller coaster. I mean, you know, there's lots of different things that affect why there's a waiting list and how large the waiting list is. Sometimes when allocation, when the amount of money available hasn't changed for years and there's a long waiting list, it starts to diminish because people lose hope. Other times when there's a lot of new money, the waiting list goes down to practically nothing. Economic downturn appears to be increasing the waiting list right now.
Representative Norna.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just had a question that I guess keeps going around in my head, and I thought I'd ask Ms. Kapelnik. When you're talking about waiting lists, just for clarification, does that represent families that have actually applied and there's no funding available, or is it really the total number of children in that particular age bracket that are available? Can you tell me which of the two are, or do we know?
Ms. Katoma.
Representative Slawick and Representative Nornis, it's the number of families that have contacted the agency asking for an application. The agency does a preliminary eligibility determination, not a full-blown verified eligibility determination, but it is people who have inquired because they need help with child care costs.
Madam Chair, I just wondered sometimes whether that was a real actual number or just, again, population that's out there that could be applying.
Over the years, we've been asked to estimate the cost of funding the waiting list and estimate the cost of fully funding the program, and I can tell you very seriously, the cost of fully funding the program is much more expensive than just the waiting list.
Ms. Kutzelmick, and then I'll Representative Ward has a question. When you hold up that chart, was it going up to an all-time high? Is that what I saw in the end?
Representative Slawick, I believe that in 03, it was close to the same level.
So we're near the maximum that it's been in the last?
Since 2000, yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Ward?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just deal with the waiting list, and I understand the priority, and I understand how you laid out the priorities, and I agree with them. My question is, does it ever get to the fifth priority? Does the waiting list dollars ever get to the fifth priority? And if it does, how much of that fifth priority waiting list gets some of those dollars?
Ms. Katoma?
It does get to the fifth priority in some counties. There are some counties who put every family who applies on the waiting list and still have unspent funds. There are some counties that have chosen over the years to serve every family, whether they're spending county funds or not. So some fifth priority families are on. In the counties that have that they have lots of people in other priorities, it's less likely that the fifth priority families will get on. We don't really keep track of how many people got on the program at what priority level to start with.
Representative Downey?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. The allocation formula, is any of that federally mandated, or is this really under the control of the state of Minnesota and we've designed it this way?
Ms. Katoma?
Representative Slawick, it's state control.
Representative Downing?
Thank you. And I'm noticing kind of the 1/4 bucket here. Is that dynamic enough for you to kind of allocate funds to the counties with the longest waiting lists? I'm noticing that there's a bunch of zeros here, and there's some that have extremely high waiting lists. Is this a little too much one size fits all, or does it work pretty well in terms of making the funds available to the counties with the highest waiting lists?
Ann Sessions is going to talk a little bit more about that, but over the years we have pulled in county partners a number of times to look at potential changes to the allocation formula in order to get the money into the most appropriate place in the most efficient manner. This is the formula that is the result of the work that we've done with counties.
Thanks. So it's, from your perspective,
Downey.
So this is pretty good and kind of the best we can...
At this point in time, we're not recommending any changes, I think that the counties will talk to you. Some of the counties that are here are counties that were on the work group and can certainly talk to you about things that they see as potential for the future.
If you'd like to proceed.
Where was I? Okay. The 4 parts that are remaining are based on county expenditures. The first one is county expenditures. So if a county is consistently under-expending in the program and spending less than their full allocation, this is one that would kind of influence a decrease in the funds that go to that county. And up to 1/4 of the remaining funds could be are allocated according to this component. The next component is transition year families. Right now, transition year families are served in the forecasted program, and they are the second priority on the waiting list. However, if we believe so strongly that we've invested enough money in these families that we really want to keep them stable, that there's a transition year extension program as part of the forecasted program, and so these families are served until they can get onto basic sliding features of transition year extension. But in order to try to control costs as much as possible in the forecasted program, they're a higher priority than some of the others. The number of families in the first three priority groups on the waiting list is the other allocation component, the third one of them, and that's the portability pool, the transition year, and the students. And then the total families on the waiting list is the other category that helps influence the distribution of the funds. The thing I want to point out about the 4 parts of the formula is that when funding is stable, because of the 90% floor that we have, 10% of the funds is distributed based on the allocation formula. So during the times when there isn't a significant increase in funds in the basic sliding fee program, there's not a significant amount of redistribution of funds because of the 4 components based on need and trying to direct more closely to the need that's shown through the waiting list numbers. And the formula doesn't really have any component that forces a reduction in future year allocations for counties that consistently underspend. So there's very small kind of movement in that too. Okay, and then there's one other component that is designed as an incentive to have counties spend as much of their allocation as possible, and that is that when counties spend between 90 and 100% of their allocation, we allow them to carry forward the unspent funds from the calendar year that they're in to the next calendar year. So it bumps up the next calendar year allocation. In case they had added families that might make them a slightly artificial high or something, they have a little bit of extra money to deal with that. Counties that spend above, this is a challenging process because if they spend above 100% of their allocation, they're responsible for the costs that are above 100%. Now, there's one little piece to that, and that is that the underspending that other counties do can be used to repay the county overspending when they overspend. So, and since 1997, we have had enough underspending to fully repay any overspending in counties based with this provision. So it's kind of a little safety net, but it's not a guaranteed safety net for them, because if every other county was spending to the full amount of their allocation, we wouldn't have money to reimburse overspending. So they're taking a chance.
We have a question, Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let's see, Ms.
Kotomic.
Okay. Doesn't the county see, I talked to Hennepin County after the last the earlier hearing, and then we had another one, and now we have this topic again, and they seem to be just hysterical that they would overspend, and hence they had quite a bit of underspending when they had such a huge waiting list, but they seemed terrified of, they just kind of told me, well, if you can't overspend, what would you be thinking of? And now you're saying there is a this other fund that's not always guaranteed to be there, but has Hennepin ever used it?
Ms. Kotomic?
Yes, Hennepin County used to budget about $2 million. Was it $2 million? They used to budget significantly over their allocated amount that they would get from the state, and they budgeted for expenditures significantly higher than that, and they were always reimbursed for those since 1997. They were always reimbursed for those over expenditures, but they planfully over expended. And in the part of the formula, the component that is based on the previous calendar year's expenditures, and that benefited them because their percentage of the total state's expenditures was larger than it would have been otherwise.
Representative Greiling.
Sure, I don't know if you're going to have time for actual counties, but I guess I would like to hear from Hennepin County again while we have these answers fresh in our minds. I guess it just bothers me that there'd be any unspent funds, and I related to the answer that I thought I got, that they were worried about overspending, and I figured, well, county funds are so tight, but then if there's this plan to take care of that problem, then I don't understand underspending when there's huge lines.
Representative Greiling, we had discussed this a little bit before you came in, the whole idea of overspending and kind of how that works. What I'd like to do, if we could make our way through with the rest of your presentation in the next, say, 2-3 minutes, and then we will have Dakota County and Blue Earth County and then Ramsey County. I don't think right now, Representative Greiling, Hennepin County is not on the agenda. But we do have several other counties here to testify.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe some of those I could ask the same question. Maybe they do the same thing.
Okay. Thank you. So if we can you finish your presentations and zip through?
I'll just have one last comment, and that is that when Hennepin County was contributing a significant amount of county money, the county budget situation was significantly different than counties are facing right now.
Welcome to the committee, Ms.
Okay, I'm Ann Sessions, and I'm the Director of Transitions Economic Stability, and I'm going to talk about some of the improvements and some of the work that we've done trying to do a better job with the allocation formula, because I was part of the work group. In 2006, and two of the people that are going to testify today later were actually part of the work group, too. So we had a work group with counties, and we went through enormous amounts of data and lots of options in trying to figure out, could we do a better job to deal with the underspending, the uncertainty, and some of that. And the challenges were that some changes could improve our targeting based on need, but they would have increased the complexity of trying to figure out for counties where that went. Some of the work group goals ended up contradicting each other. We wanted something to be easy, and yet at the same time we wanted more money to go certain places, and we wanted to protect spending levels. So that was a challenge. And some of the changes that we discussed actually appeared to increase the fairness, but they didn't have any significant impact on the allocation formula itself. So the group pretty much came out with three recommendations, and that was that we should change the formula and use waiting list and transition year averages instead of a point in time. So it used to be that when we reallocate that up to 10%, it was a point in time, and we said it would be better if we used averages. The work group also recommended sharing best practices so that counties could help figure out and share with each other what they were doing. And there was a recommendation to fully fund the portability pool set aside. So in 2008, the legislature did adopt the waiting list and transition year average change. The work group recommended this and it was brought forward. We also brought forward a proposal that would cap the amount per family that would be allocated in the four parts of that, the 10% piece, not the 90%. And the capped amount per family really is only a big help when there's a lot of infusion of money into the basic sliding fee program. Because what we were finding is in some cases, counties were getting more money than they needed based on the number of families in a particular category, and it didn't seem to make any sense. But if there isn't a large infusion of money into the basic sliding fee program, this isn't a bad thing. It just doesn't help as much as we thought it would. As far as best practices, in late 2005, the department started sending a monthly update to the counties. We go with the year-to-date expenditures for the county. We give them estimates based on what we think they're going to be spending. And you'll hear some of the challenges of this because spending always goes up in the summer months when kids aren't in school. You aren't sure if a family is on the program and then they have another child. You have infant costs. And so, I mean, there's lots of unpredictability into doing this. But we give them an estimate. And then we also share the statewide estimates and unspent fund estimates so that in those counties where they have authority from their board to overspend based on the bet that they're going to be reimbursed if other counties underspend, they have a better idea of whether or not they're really going to be reimbursed. So we started doing this in late 2005. In 2006, the department went out and did training focused on managing the basic sliding fee allocation waiting list. Several of the things that we talked were in detail with the counties about the various components of the allocation, the mechanics of the carry forward, which you clearly understand are complicated, rules about waiting list priority groups, who goes into which list, when you can really move people off of the list, and generally moving families off the waiting list. I fully expect you will hear from the counties that the basic sliding fee is a very difficult program to manage, that some counties consistently over or underspend. Some vary by year. We work with counties that are underspending and have waiting lists and try to figure out if they need some kind of technical assistance in order to understand the formula and what they could be doing to spend more. The cases in basic sliding fee have become more complicated to manage over the years because, as Ms. Kotelnik described, a lot of these families are moving off of MFIP, and they are often in less stable jobs with less stable hours, less stable situations, and so they require more attention by the child care worker in order to make sure that we're authorizing the correct amount. And another challenge is that there's significant lag time between when a county actually processes an application and when they make payments for care. And so when counties understand that there's an allocation or they're underspending and they have a waiting list, and we hear this very often, they may send out letters to everyone or a good chunk of families on the waiting list. They don't hear back from a lot of families because maybe they don't need care anymore, maybe they've moved on to a different situation, maybe they're managing okay. They hear back from a number of families. Then they have to turn around and get the application. They need to confirm whether or not the provider is licensed or get them licensed. They need to get all sorts of information about the hours. And then they need to authorize the care, and then the provider needs to bill for it. So even when counties work to get families off the waiting list in order to deal with their underspending, it still can be a significant amount of time before they actually have payments coming out of it. And we'd be happy to take other questions.
Thank you. What I think we'll do, members and through testifiers, is we will move to the county testimony, but I think there's a possibility you may be called back up. So if you can stay nearby, we'd appreciate it. So if we can have Ruth Kruger from Dakota County and Bob Meyer from Blue Earth County come down. Members, we're going to need approval of the minutes. Representative Rosenthal, have you read the minutes? Thank you. Representative Rosenthal moves approval of the minutes for February 12th. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails, and the minutes for February 12th are adopted. And just a reminder, members, that there is not a meeting this Thursday. That is canceled, and our next meeting will be next Tuesday, a week from today. Welcome to the committee. On the agenda, I have Ms. Kruger first. Would you like to go first?
Yes. Okay, thank you.
Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record.
Ruth Kruger. I'm with Dakota County. I'm the Director of Employment and Economic Assistance, and I also chair the Early Childhood Committee for MACSA. You've heard a lot. You have a handout that I prepared, and some of it is duplicative of what Ms. Kapilnik and Ann Sisson presented. But it is a very, very complicated program. You're going to hear a lot of that from the counties today. What makes it complicated is that cap and the fact that you divide that allocation out to 87 different counties, and we all try to figure it out. And then we don't treat everybody who's eligible for the program the same. You've heard about the different priorities that are there. And the first four priorities that you have are set by the state. And so they're parents without a GED or a high school degree, clients who have been on MFIP, gone off, used their full transition year, and now they're on transition year extended, the portability pool, and then clients who need child care to maintain employment or job search. And the question was asked how many of those families we actually get to. Dakota's been fortunate. I'll talk a little later about the fact of how and which years we've actually moved some of those. But quite frankly, most of the working poor come on to child care through the MFIP program. They apply for MFIP, they get child care with MFIP, they go off of MFIP, and they're guaranteed child care in transition year or in transition year extended. And then finally, requesting to attend post-secondary school. In Dakota County, we make that last. The counties actually have, between employment and school, the right to allocate those themselves as to a priority. Dakota County, in recognition that one of our highest priority, quite frankly, is keeping teenage moms in school, because if you don't get your high school diploma, it impacts so significantly the rest of your life. So we've consistently, as teen moms have applied, immediately added them on to our child care program, regardless of where we were with our sliding fee allocation. Starting March 1st, we are no longer going to be able to do that. We're going to put them on our waiting list.
Ms. Kruger, how many teenage moms would that be per year, approximately?
It's usually not more than a dozen, or maybe up to 24, no more than a couple of months. We haven't tracked it significantly because it hasn't been a big issue, but we're starting to see such a tight program that we've had to decide we can't just automatically add them.
Thank you.
As I indicated when I was here February 5th, I've been managing in the basic sliding fee program in one capacity or another since 1988, and it has been significantly difficult. We have always in Dakota County viewed being underspent as bad as being overspent, because the state, the federal government, and our county board have authorized us to use this money for families. And we really want to get it out there. I firmly believe all counties want to get that money out there. However, being significantly overspent is not a good place for counties to be. the structure is, as we've talked about, the fact that it's capped, the fact that you can't take families off the program once you put them on, that expenditures beyond the county's allocation are the responsibility of that county unless other counties have underspent. I want to really reiterate that. I know you've heard that. But counties have differing abilities to manage overspending. The reserves aren't equal in counties across the state, and I know that influences the behavior. When additional families are added or drop off the program, it's not like your spending changes the next month. It's a very slow process to get families added, get them up to spending, and then when they start going off, the spending level goes down very slowly. I liken it to trying to stop a cruise ship in the middle of the ocean. It's a very slow process if you need to turn around and go back and pick up somebody. Frequent changes to the state impacts expenditures. We try to go back and look historically, how much does a family tend to cost, but every time you change something, that changes the history and it changes our ability to predict. And when, as in 2003, everything seemed to change in the child care program, we really had no ability to predict where we were going to be on child care spending. Then you add to the fact that individual families go on to the child care program and we try to estimate what they will need for child care at that point in time. But it doesn't stay that way. They may decide to go from a family child care to a center or from a center to a family child care. And the amount of child care goes up and down accordingly. A child may leave the home. A child may come home from either another parent or foster care or extended treatment. So the number of children in the home isn't even stable. Job situations, particularly now, change. So either people are working more hours or they're working less hours, and their need for child care goes up and down. And all of this adds to the complexity of the program. The administrative capacity to deal with child care varies from county to county. In Dakota County, financial workers do child care. They also do all the health care programs. And so as the need for various programs go up, and counties have very limited budgets to add any new staff at this point, they may not all be able to respond quickly to either to add families when they see that they actually have capacity. I'd like to elaborate a little bit on a few points. Dakota County, in 2008, we opened our intake only for families on the waiting list, and we only opened it for January to mid-April. We did no general intake. That means none of those Category 5 working low-income families were added in Dakota County in 2008. From May to December, we kept watching for that normal drop that we get when we quit doing intake and families leave. We didn't get it. We started looking very nervously in September and then in October, and then we started checking with our friends at DHS to try to see if we could predict, was the total state fund going to be underspent? Because we could see that unless something changed significantly in the last quarter, we were going to be $600,000 to $800,000 overspent in child care in Dakota County. I was not looking forward to going to the county board because I did not have authorization to overspend that child care fund. It was not our intent to overspend it. We thought we were managing it as we had managed it in previous years so that we'd come in closer. In 2007, we cleared our waiting list between February and May, and then it still looked pretty good. So we did a general intake. We invited as many of those income-eligible families as we could find with press releases and telling the nonprofits and all the usual partners that we work with that we were doing general intake for child care. We did that only for 6 weeks because, as you can imagine, we got a very good response and closed general intake on June 29th. which then gave us a full 6 months for those to drop off, and we did a better job than we did in 2008. We were only overspent by $143,000. If you look at the chart at the bottom of page 2, you'll see in 2006, we actually came in within $2,500 of an over $6 million allocation. That's pretty unusual, and I'm not going to claim it was expertise. There was a lot of good luck in that. So, but it is very difficult. We decided in 2006 as counties that instead of just complaining how difficult the program was to manage, we should talk to DHS and see if there was anything we could do. And Ann Sessions has done a very good job of talking through the fact that we looked at everything we could think of. We wanted to make changes to the formulas that would direct funds to the counties that need the most in terms of priority and magnitude. Be stable, predictable, equitable, need-driven, simple. That was kind of contradictory, and we knew we weren't going to be able to pull all those off. Understandable, so that individuals managing the formula can gauge whether an action they are contemplating will be positive or negative. What impact will it have on the fund? Minimize the variation between counties as to how much goes unmet, need goes unmet. Each county should have the same level of unmet need if there is unmet need for the state as a whole. Quite frankly, some of the smaller counties that have zero on the waiting list are really afraid that Hennepin, Ramsey, Dakota, the big counties with big waiting lists would suck up every dime of child care subsidy available in the state if there weren't a fairly set formula. And they know that they have less capacity lots of times to help those families. The one thing that I would really like to see you change, you've heard that for MFIP, families going off MFIP get child care. First, they're guaranteed a transition year, and if they don't get on the basic sliding fee program at the end of the transition year, they can go on transition year extended. That's not true for portability pools, which is families moving from one county to another. You look at Dakota, Ramsey, and Hennepin, and that's where there's a lot of movement of families. They move because they found better housing. They move because they found a job and they need to be close to it. You know what transportation costs. But if they can't get onto the basic sliding fee in the county they moved into within 6 months, they're off of child care. And I don't mean they're probably off of child care just until there is room on the basic sliding fee. I mean that if their income is over 175% of poverty, and of course we hope they're working their way up towards that 250% and their co-pays are going up, they're becoming more self-sufficient while they're working, they're just not eligible anymore, period. If their income at the point where they reapply is over 175%, they don't get child care. That's incredibly destabilizing. And no matter how many times we tell them, they're so excited about the new job, they're so excited about the better housing, that they don't hear us when we say, you'll only get child care for 6 months if there isn't room on the waiting list in Hennepin or Ramsey. So if portability pool was the same as the transition year, if we had portability pool extended so that once you got on, you were assured that you could stay on until you were no longer income eligible or your children aged out of child care, it would feel a much fairer program for them. Of course, in summary, every child care fund manager dreams of that program that Sheree Tilnick mentioned, where you would simply forecast child care, and it would be like MFIP or Minnesota Care or medical assistance. If you were eligible, you were eligible. But in this economic crisis, I know the fiscal note doesn't make that possible. Our second choice is to, and I noticed that neither Ann or Sheree mentioned that, was that we've asked the state to take over and manage the waiting list for it at the state level to try and even it out. Now, we aren't pushing that right now because we need history from the new child care computer system, MEC squared, that you've been hearing about. Until that has 18 months or 2 years worth of data so that the state can figure out how it would actually manage that, so that the state wouldn't be overspent, that would be problematic, and we're willing to wait on that. And also the smaller counties need some assurance that we bigger counties wouldn't absorb. As I was thinking about this, I came across a quotation that I like from Niels Bohr, who's a Danish physicist, the first to apply quantum theory, which restricts the energy of the system to certain discrete values, to the problem of atomic and molecular structure. And I'm sure you're wondering how that applies to Charles here. But after careful, I mean, you know, this is a rather bright man. After thinking about it carefully, he said, predictions are hard, especially about the future. Well, after 20 years of trying to manage the child care fund, I think maybe quantum theory would be easier than the basic sliding fee funding allocation.
Well, the thank you. I think, members, what we'll do is have the testimony from Blue Earth County, and then we can open up for questions. We do have Ramsey County as well here, so let's see how it goes with Blue Earth County. Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record and proceed with the testimony.
All right. My name is Bob Meyer. I'm the Human Service Director in Blue Earth County. I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today about our experience managing the basic sliding fee child care allocation. I hope our experience in 2008 will help you understand some of the challenges and variables that we in counties face each and every year. I've provided a chart of our allocation and spending for the last 3 years to give you a sense of our experience managing these funds. We have typically been able to manage our spending to be very close to our allocation. As you can see, for 2006 and 2007, we were very close to our allocation total. 1 year just a little bit above our allocation. We overspent just a little bit. And another year, we were just below our allocation by a few thousand dollars. Obviously, 2008 was a much different story for us. You've already heard some testimony about the county's perspective in terms of managing up to the allocation and trying to avoid overspending our allocation. That's certainly the message that we've given to our staff as they work to manage those resources. We certainly have tried to impress upon our staff that we want to stay within our allocation, but we do want to utilize those funds to serve families in our community.
We do have a question now. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for coming all the way from Blue Earth, first of all. Appreciate
no problem.
That, because it's important for us, all of us, to hear about Greater Minnesota as well. So, you know, I just have this quick question, and maybe I'm not understanding this to my fullest extent, but I see that you have 91 still on your on the waiting list in December of 2008, but your allocation is higher, significantly higher than the amount spent. How come you still have 91 on the waiting list?
Well, part of my testimony is going to be all about some of the challenges and obstacles we encountered in 2008. I will tell you that already in 2009, we are on pace to utilize all of our funds. So 2008 for us was really an unusual year.
Thank you. Mr. Meyer, please proceed.
So, as I said, in 2008, we did encounter a number of circumstances that created obstacles to us utilizing all of our allocation. Our story really is one of a perfect storm, hopefully it's a story that won't be repeated into the future, but it is a story that I think will make sense when I tell you some of the obstacles and variables that came into play. We really need to go back to 2007 for the beginning of this story, where we were managing our allocation in 2007, and as we got towards the end of that year, we could see that our spending was likely to exceed our available allocation. And so the message that we gave the staff at that point was to not enroll additional families, to kind of make sure that we weren't doing anything so that we would wind up in a situation where we were overspending. In September of 2007, we received the notice from the Department of Human Services indicating that our 2008 allocation was increasing 40%. And so we were caught in a situation where we were trying to slow down our spending at the end of 2007. And as soon as January 1st, 2008 arrived, we had to really start loading up. And we actually started removing families from the waiting list in late 2007. We had hoped that by adding families off the waiting list that we would have reached a level that would have spent out our 2008 allocation, but that obviously did not happen. Some additional things that occurred in 2008, we did incur some turnover in our supervisory staff responsible for overseeing our child care assistance program. Our new supervisor, once they were hired, was given a crash course in managing the basic sliding fee child care program, but nonetheless had a very steep learning curve. Also, in February of 2008, we began our work of converting to the new MEC Squared software. Over the course of a number of months, our staff were required to attend 11 and a half days of training sessions and meetings. We converted 161 providers to the system and added 280 cases to the new system. We completed the last of our conversion activities in November of 2008. Adding families off the waiting list during that conversion time was not possible given the workload that staff were faced with in terms of that conversion process. As we neared the end of 2008, we began taking more names off the waiting list once staff again had some time to actually attend to that responsibility. When we started contacting families that were on the waiting list, we saw a very surprising result, and this is one of the things that I think Ruth touched upon. We actually saw that very few families followed through with the application process at that point. Our first attempt to add families off the waiting list resulted in only 15% of the families actually applying. Our next attempt actually saw a greater percentage, about 65% of the families responded, but our most recent attempt, again, only saw about 20% of the families actually follow through with an application. We think this is partly due to the current economy, where a number of families that had previously been residing on the waiting list no longer have need for child care because of the recession. This volatility makes it difficult for us to project how many families to bring off our waiting list. For example, if we contact 20 families and we expect that 10 or 15 are going to actually go on to the child care program and only half that amount actually apply, it delays our process in terms of spending out those resources. As Ruth mentioned, the ramp-up time is very long, and so we have to estimate how many families are actually going to follow through with the application and be added onto the program. And if we underestimate that, it makes it difficult to utilize those funds. We're currently at 83 families on our waiting list after starting 2008 with 141 families, so we have reduced our waiting list substantially. Again, we are also on track to spend all of our 2009 allocation, which did go up a little bit, so we'll be able to serve more families. We're also seeing that with the new software system that we are getting some reports that we haven't had available during that conversion period, which we think will help us manage our resources even better than we have in the past. So in summary, 2008 was a very unusual year for us in terms of managing these resources. Circumstances related to the conversion activity, our own staff turnover, the potential underspending in 2007, and then the 40% increase in our allocation in 2008 all contributed to the challenges we encountered. With conversion behind us,
and the waiting list reduced, we're very confident that we'll be able to utilize all of our funds going forward, and we'll do our best to do so.
Thank you. I appreciate you coming and sharing your story and letting us know how it's going in your county. Members, are there questions? You know, I have a question. What you say worries me about the waiting list, about how when you call the families and then you only have 15 or 20% then on the waiting list that actually go into child care, go into the program. Is that other years, was it that low or was it higher? Because it's as legislators, you know, I think we're somewhat conditioned to worry about waiting lists. But when we hear the waiting list may not be as, you know, kind of soft, it's hard for us to make, and you too, make good judgments about those.
Madam Chair, clearly this year was, or our recent experience is very different than what we had seen in prior years. We were seeing a much higher response rate in other years. And our assumption is that due to layoffs and losses of jobs in our communities, that the need for child care is actually down from what we expected. So part of the issue is that because these people, our families, have been on the waiting list for a number of months, their circumstances have changed, but we don't update those waiting lists until we're ready to move people off the waiting list and onto the program.
Thank you. And to stay or to go on the waiting list, they just fill out a preliminary form. Then when they get the call from you, they do the more in-depth form. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, that's correct. We do certainly share the information about the eligibility criteria, but we finalize the application process at the time that they're added to the program, and certainly circumstances change, income can change, that could make them ineligible at that time.
Members, questions? Representative Downey?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Follow-up to that, is there kind of a range that the waiting list, you said 20% kind of conversion off the waiting list was extremely low. I'd be curious, is there a range or some kind of factor that you can apply to predict that? Is it average 50% or is it 80%? That's an important statistic as we look at these lists.
My sense is, and I don't know if Ruth has other information, but my sense is we would have expected at least half of the families to follow through with the application.
Thank you.
Ms. Kruger?
Looking at our 2008 numbers, we had over half of them respond to our telling them that we were now ready to and file applications. Out of that, from the total waiting list to those we actually put on was 19%. And some of that was people didn't respond to our initial letters. They had moved. They hadn't kept current. They didn't need it anymore. We don't really know when they don't respond. And then out of those that that actually followed, that sent it in, 50% followed through. So we added 140 from our waiting list to the program, and we had 600 on the waiting list that we started with. But 2008 was lower. I didn't bring the numbers for the others. But.
Thank you. Let's hear. We'll hear from Ramsey County, and if you want to, there are questions. Oh, is there somebody, Representative Bly or Representative Ward?
Thank you. I do have a question. Mr. Meyer, the guaranteed floor is 90% of the previous year allocation, as I understand it. And I noticed that your allocation, it looks like to me, went up significantly more than that. Am I wrong in interpreting that?
You're talking from 2007 to 2008?
Yeah, 2008, excuse me, Madam Chair.
Representative Ward,
sorry. Your 2008 allocation, it looked to me like it went up more than the 90% guaranteed floor.
Our allocation actually went up 40%. From 2007 to 2008, our allocation increased by 40%.
Okay. So can you clarify why? I think we're all wondering why it would go 40%.
Madam Chair, I'm not sure I can answer that question. I might look to our DHS counterparts. Certainly, the allocation formula would drive those numbers.
Right.
And then one element of that is clearly the waiting list. And beyond that, I don't know quite how to answer that question.
Okay, maybe Well, hold on. I do have some questions for the department to come back down at the end, so why don't we right now, we'll wait on that. Is there Representative Mariani?
And maybe this is a department question. This is sort of like a macro question, I suppose. I mean, so I'm trying to put myself in both of your shoes, and obviously, the ability to do some, intelligent forecasting and, shooting for stability is vitally important. It seems to me that, and we've had this, some of these discussions, as you know, Madam Chair, in the Poverty Commission over the last couple of years, there's a number of factors here that factor in, and obviously demographic factors. So you have people moving in and out of your respective counties, but you also have economic trends that are happening. And I was just commenting to Representative Gravely that it's ironic that with job growth, that's a good thing, comes a need for, subsidized child care, which says something to me about the nature of those jobs and, the wages that are being generated out of those jobs. I know it's not as simple as that, but that's part of it. So so the kind of the big macro question, we don't have to really get into it, how much do your respective counties, kind of do this scanning of your demographics, of your economic job growth trends, and very quickly, prior to the, right now we're in very unusual times, but leading up to these times, what was happening? Was your population getting younger? Were people moving in from other places? Did you see an expansion of jobs with low wages?
Ms. Kruger?
Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, Dakota is in a little unique position from Blue Earth because we're part of the regional economic, and so we look at the regional all the time, but many people who live in Dakota don't work in Dakota County, and many people who work in Dakota County don't live there, which probably isn't as true for rural Minnesota. So we do take that into account, but we haven't quite figured out how to apply it in when we open and close the child care list.
Mr. Meyer?
Well, I can try and address it as well. I haven't made the direct connection, but in our community, we are a regional hub as well on a much smaller scale. And a lot of our jobs in our communities are lower paying jobs that families would then need child care assistance in order to have both parents working. And so we see a lot of service sector jobs, a lot of manufacturing jobs that are relatively low paying. We monitor that on an overall basis in terms of the need coming into the Human Service Department, but a direct connection to the child care program is a little harder to make.
Thank you. I think we'll move on, members, with Ramsey County, and then Tori Hippler and Mary Nelson. For the department, the questions I was going to ask or would like at the very end to address is about if basic sliding fee could possibly be a target for the stimulus funds or not, and if that is, how are we going to predict all of that in this kind of environment? Welcome to the committee. Who would like to go first?
I'll start, if that's all right. I'm Mary Nelson from Ramsey County Human Services. I'm the director of the Financial Assistance Services Division. And
I'm Tori Hippler, and I'm the Child Care Assistance Manager at Resources for Child Caring. And Resources for Child Caring administers the basic sliding fee program for Ramsey County.
Thank you. So this is a partnership, and we're here together. I think you've heard a lot already this afternoon about the difficulties of managing the basic sliding fee and child care program. We would reiterate all of those difficulties and say that's absolutely right. It's a very difficult program to manage. A couple of things, though, that I think I would like to sort of reiterate the points, and that's, again, as others have said, all counties really want to spend all of this money. We would like as many families in Ramsey County and across the state as possible to be getting child care assistance. We were in the position... we're one of those counties that goes up and down. Sometimes we underspend. 2007, we overspent. Last year, we underspent, and we underspent by a fairly significant amount of money. That was a difficult surprise for us in some ways. because we had overspent in 2007, we had to go into 2008 at a very steady level in our caseload. Because again, while it's true that if there's underspending, counties can tap into that if they overspend, frankly, most county boards in this time of levy limits and tough budgets aren't interested in taking a chance on the if there's underspending. And so it's very difficult for us to have permission to overspend that account. So we went through last year trying to manage that. We took people off those first four categories, but we're only able to take a few people off the fifth category. And again, it's that whole thing around how much are you spending, and we use a fairly simplistic sort of approach to this. What's our grant amount? How much do we think the average amount is we're spending for each family, and based on that, what do we think our caseload size should be? And so we always have a number in front of us that we're trying to hit. But when things happen, like all of a sudden you get a couple months where you significantly underspent what you would have predicted you should spend, particularly when those are after the first half of the year, it is very difficult to catch up. And so while you may think your spending was on target early in the year, come July or maybe September when the summer bills have come in and they're not as high as you expected them to be, it is almost impossible to catch up by the end of the year because of all the difficulties you've heard about getting people off the waiting list. We are, in fact, in the process right now of ramping up and taking people off the waiting list. But I will tell you that, you know, you go in reverse order, and the people who will get letters from us first have been on our waiting list since November of 2006. And while we, in fact, do update our waiting list on a regular basis, and Tori can give you more information about that if you're interested, it's a very sort of cursory update that has more to do with can we still find you than anything else. And so it will be it's always a surprise to us what percentage of our families we hear from and how many of those families are still eligible for the program. One of the things that I would like to stress here, though, is that I think, you know, in these economic times, there are some things about the way the basic sliding fee program rules work that are going to make it difficult for us to get enough people off our waiting list to actually meet our expenditures. Under state statute, people can only have up to 240 hours of job search time. Otherwise, they need to be employed to fit into that category. I think you could understand that in the current economy, it's highly likely that 240 hours of job search time is not going to necessarily be adequate to find a job. And so we may have lots of families we pull off the waiting list who don't have jobs like they had when they got on the waiting list. We can give them up to 240 hours of job search, but frankly, that's not very much. And once they use that up, then we simply have to put them on hold, and they're not eligible for any more child care assistance until they find employment. So I think there are some things, too, in this current economy that are going to make it hard for us to hit our targets on expending all of this money. Tori, anything to add?
Thank you. And suggestions like that are very helpful in terms of maybe in this particular year what might be helpful for families or we could possibly put into bills. So thank you for that suggestion.
Well, our goal right now is really to start removing families from the waiting list, especially since they've been waiting for 2 years now. But we're expecting that process is going to be slow, and we're not sure of the response rate. I know in the past when we had an open waiting list or removed the waiting list at the beginning of 2006, we've seen about a 30% response rate for families applying, so we're not sure if it's, you know, looks like other counties are experiencing less than that at this time. So it's possible that we could remove almost everybody on our waiting list and still not meet our expenses. And also just the requirements that are involved in applying, it's challenging for some families if they don't have all the requirements available to apply. The application process is lengthy. It's more than just filling out an application. They have to verify identity, residence, relationships, children. They have to cooperate with child support. So there's a lot of paperwork involved with the application. And so that application process is lengthy. And then, as other counties have stated, the delay time once they get approved, care has to be done, and then providers need to reimburse. So even if we, you know, if Ramsey County starts getting families to apply and we get families on our program, let's say in March and April, we're not going to see those expenses until June and July. And by that time, half the year is gone, so we may struggle still with this year, even with adding families onto the program, to being able to meet 90% of our expenses.
Thank you. Members, are there questions? Representative Lane?
I just want to thank Ms. Kruger for making a light come on in my brain that basically there's not enough money, so we can't take everybody, so counties get a cap, and because of the difficulty in getting people on in this long, complex process, we actually have to stop mid-year and hope that it works out.
Thank you. I think that's the short explanation. Well, thank you. Representative Byling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think lights are coming out of my brain, too, but it really, you know, the Mariani said it well. He's trying to put himself in the shoes of the people who are trying to administer this program. And it sounds like it's a lot of by guess and by golly. And, one thing that I need to understand better is when the governor, in the last budget deficit situation, robbed this fund, how does that factor into the uncertainties of the counties being able to spend this money? I wonder if maybe Mary Nelson.
Actually, when the child care fund was significantly cut, 2003, by statute, if as a county you put people on and you are going to overspend, that's your problem, basically. The one exception to that is if the fund itself is actually cut. And if the fund itself is actually cut, then you are allowed to take people who are currently on the program off in order to stay within the allocation. And that, in fact, is what happened in 2003. That is a very difficult thing to do, as you can well imagine. Not only is it difficult for those families, but then those people go to the top of the waiting list that was already established and get top priority for coming back on. So all the families who thought they were at the top of the waiting list are now going to find out, and if you're in Ramsey County, oh, sorry, there's another 200 families in front of you. So it actually creates a considerable amount of chaos and some real difficulties for the families involved.
I would like to find out when we get the DHS people up here if they know if that's being planned for this year.
Thank you. I think we'll have Representative Peterson. Do you have a question? And is it for the department or for the testifiers?
Well, maybe these testifiers.
Okay. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I suppose this is putting them on the spot, but it seems to me that these programs being administered by the counties have different processes for each county. I mean, yes, they have similar rules, but the processes are very cumbersome, and you've got, 87 counties doing this kind of absurd process in a way. I mean, it seems to me, would it be better to have a state administer this program with counties having a person accountable to the state? I mean, it just seems to me there needs to be an easier way to administer the program. And I suppose that is putting you on the spot in terms of saying you want this rather to be state than county. I don't know.
Ms. Nelson? I think a couple of things about that, I guess, that I would say. In taking the larger view in terms of 87 counties and 87 administrative structures, certainly it's true that that's a lot of duplication of effort. I don't think anybody can argue that it isn't. The implementation of the MEC squared system is going to actually make things more consistent across counties than it's probably been before, because many of the rules are now sort of being